20. Context. On the Via Aquila, there are so many people. Keeler has been walking against the flow for an hour, trying to locate and coordinate other members of the conclave. At every step, people reach out to touch her. They stare. They call her name.
"Are you her?"
they ask.
"Are you her?"
"Keep moving," she says. "Go north." They must all keep moving. That's the only way to serve him. Keep moving in the firm belief that there is a future to move towards. Keep trusting that he knows better, that he can see beyond the range of our mortal vision. Keep moving so the design can be completed. She hears a rumble and some screams. The basalt columns of the Navis Mercantile have collapsed into the street, onto a portion of the vast crowd. People are dead. Her breath catches. What part of the design was that? Is suffering part of the design? Must we endure to prove something? Does survival prove worth? Does death winnow out the unworthy? She hates the turn of her mind, the way faith grates against reason. To stop herself from screaming, she has to trust that he has a greater context, that what is insufferable to her is meaningful to him. Are we made to suffer? Is our purpose not to merely suffer, but through suffering to prevail? Then she remembers something Loken said to her before he quit her side to organize the rearguard. "The Emperor is the shield and protector of humanity, Euphrates. But what is his shield?" "Us. We are. It is reciprocal. He protects us, and through our faith and perseverance we protect him. We are one and the same, mankind and Emperor, Emperor and mankind. Souls bound together. We are together as one, or we are nothing." Perhaps that's the real meta veritas, not to become so lost in your own pain you forget the greater context. If everything can be shared, nothing is too much. How typical of an Astartes to appreciate that. How untypical of one to articulate it. But then, Garvey Loken had always been unusual. And he had been there, with her, at the very start of things. She wonders where he is now, and if he still lives, or if, like Nathaniel Garrow, he has become another tragic victim of this war. She climbs onto the raised colonnade to escape the worst of the crowd. From here, she can see the great breadth of the avenue. So many people. All are caked in dust. Many are deaf or glassy with acoustic shock. Others are being carried. Almost everyone has bound their hands and heads with rags, covering wounds, wrapping damaged ears to dull the constant roar, covering mouths to sieve the dust, covering eyes. So many blindfolded, walking in human chains, hands linked, each following the next. Blind faith. We do not need to see the future in order to make towards it, as long as we are all moving together. She realizes her hands are cupped in front of her chest, unconsciously miming the way she used to hold her picture, ready to bring it up to capture a moment. For a second, she is a remembrancer again. Just a simple remembrancer with a good eye, observing and recording objectively. She hasn't been that in a very long time, though the instinct has survived. This view of the Via Aquila would make a memorable Pict. The sort of Pict the old Euphrates Keeler, the famous imagist, would have been eager to capture. Perhaps that objectivity was why she was chosen for this thankless role. The ability to step back and see the fleeting moment and know that, for all its horror, it was a cropped part of a greater, unseeable whole. That, or she was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. She jumps off the buttress onto the street and hurries to the junction with Glasses Street. The crowds thin out on Glasses. She has to find some speakers to go back and direct the multitude on past the fountains and Diador Circle to relieve the throttled pressure further south. Gang crews are heaving down Glasses Street towards her, hauling wagons of guns and munitions from the burning manufactories at Tavian Arch. The Conclave has been doing this work since the start, manually delivering ammunition and reconditioned weapons to the frontline defenders. It is a back-breaking effort. The wagons, stenciled MM226 on their side panels, are heavy. The gangs are all coffled together, yoked to the mismatched wagons. They are all blindfolded, so they can't see the nightmares and desert their posts. Each team is guided by an unblindfolded leader. The guide closest to her, a young woman, sees Keela and calls to her.
"We were making for the Gilded Walk," she says. "Can we go this way?"
Keela shakes her head. The girl calls out to her team, and they come to a halt, lowering the yoke and ropes to steal a moment's relief. The other gang crews halt behind them.
"Aquila is choked," says Keela, "and Kiros too. There's no way through." "Then what do we do with this?" the girl asks, gesturing to the wagons.
"Go across to Montaigne Way," Keela suggests. "Perhaps get it to the Exultant Line. There are Imperial Fists and Blood Angels holding there in urgent need of resupply."
She shrugs.
"Or leave it here," she adds as an afterthought.
"Leave it?"
asks the girl indignantly.
"You've done a lot," says Keela. "If you push on down Montaigne and go into that, I don't think you'll make it back."
"But it's needed,"
says the girl.
"It is."
"I'm not going to give up."
"I'm not telling you to," says Keela. "We're trying to bring the crowds this way, move everyone north. It's almost impossible. There are so many people. You can press on, or you can come with us."
"I'm not going to give up,"
the girl repeats, but it's barely a whisper. There are tears in her eyes.
"Is there more?"
Keela asks. The girl sniffs.
"We cleared out what we could,"
she replies.
"What we could load. There is more, but most of the plants are shutting down. At Tavian, anyway. MM341 is on fire. MM226 is out of intermix."
"You were one of Kirill's, weren't you?"
says Keela suddenly.
"What?"
Keela reaches out and points to the torn warrant paper pinned to the front of the girl's dirty smock below the purity tag. The bold eye icon is still visible.
"One of Cinderman's. His new remembrances?"
"Interrogators,"
the girl says.
"I remember.
I was one for a while too, you know."
The girl nods.
"I'm Keela,"
says Keela.
"I know who you are, ma'am. I know what you are."
"Do you?"
"Throne, please tell me."
"Your hope,"
the girl says.
"Our hope in the Emperor and the cause of man. Cinderman told us that."
"Did he?"
"He also told us not to believe everything you said."
"Kirill's very wise."
"But I don't see how we can't."
"Not now,"
the girl says.
"Not now. I think, ma'am, that's why I was upset when you said we should give up. If hope gives up..."
"I didn't mean that."
"What's your name?"
"Lita Tang."
"Why did you stop being an interrogator, Lita?"
"I don't think I did. It just seemed more important to do this."
Tang gestures wearily at the wagons.
"Besides,"
she says with a shrug,
"who wants to remember this?"
"Didn't Kirill tell you?"
Keela asks.
"Oh yes, some long and inspirational speech. Something Lord Dawn said. The act of recording a history affirms that there will be a future in which people will read it. It's a profound act of optimism." There you go, says Keeler.
Tang sighs.
I still don't believe anyone will want to remember this, she says.
I agree. But things change, says Keeler. I asked why you stopped interrogating and started hauling munitions because it shows that we alter according to necessity. Pulling shells to the front line is important. Was important. Maybe getting the helpless out of the kill zones is more important now. That's not giving up hope. That's just pragmatic.
Do you still believe in a future?
Tang asks.
I'm trying to,
Keeler replies. She's thought about this often.
I remember when I was with the expeditionary fleet, with Horus. Throne, I can barely say his name. That was all about the future. We imagined the future, and it seemed so bright and inspiring. Now I struggle to imagine anything at all. But I want to imagine something. I need to. We all need to. If we imagine a future, the best version we can manage, then perhaps that's how we realize it. I don't think it will be so bright and inspiring now, but I think it can be better than this, this apparent inevitability.
Everyone's just talking about nothing, says Tang.
Have you noticed that? Just, I don't know, phatic conversations among the damned and doomed. Just talking about nothing. At the start, it was all memories of the future, you know. When this is over, I'll go see my aunt and visit the Planalto or Antipo Hive again, or I can't wait to see my brother. But now it's all just the past, like we're stuck. People don't even say, I remember. They just talk about people who are probably dead, or people who are dead, as if they are alive, like they're fossilising the past as something to cling on to.
She trails off.
Or am I going mad?
No, I have noticed that, says Keeler. And I noticed you said memories of the future just then.
Did I? I'm tired.
No, Lita. I think we are stuck in the now. I fear we literally are. My cron stopped yesterday. Do you know what time it is? What day it is, even?
Tang shakes her head.
I think we are invaded by more than just material violence, says Keeler. I think we are invaded on a metaphysical level. Time and place is warping, slowing down, getting stuck. A constant now, where the past is barely a memory, with no value at all, and the future is withheld. Someone once wrote, "The future has no other reality than as present hope."
Was it Master Cinderman?
Keeler laughs.
No, but it's something he told me. It's a very old piece of writing. What I'm saying is that hope contains the future, and it's the one thing we have, more potent than a cartload of shells.
Is this where you tell me the Emperor has a plan?
Dear me. Kirill really did talk about me, didn't he?
Everyone is talking about you, ma'am.
All right, then. I think he does have a plan. And it is contingent on us believing in it. Our hope in it, our faith in it, makes it happen. We are the plan, and the plan is us. They are not separate things. The Emperor doesn't have a plan that, if we perish, will still come to fruition. The plan is us.
It's going to be hard to hold on to that idea,
says Tang.
I know, it's not easy.
Listen, some of the Conclave have operational Vox units. If I can find one, maybe we can raise the forward positions. Inform them we're holding munitions here. Have your teams rest. Maybe pull the wagons to the side of the street so the crowds can move through. Tang nods.
The plan is really us?
She asks. It always has been, says Keeler.